Hello and welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Jim Rugg.
I'm Ed Piskor.
Going to look at Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely's All-Star Superman today, at least issues 1-6, the first half of All-Star Superman. But before we do, Ed, tell us about Red Room.
Red Room, sellout comic, man. We have printed tens of thousands of copies to try to meet demand, and it was just not enough. The word on the street is the same everywhere. Stores thought they overordered based on kayfabe enthusiasm. Turns out that everybody underordered, man, as we predicted. Murder on the Dark Web for Fun and Profit is the name of the game with this comic, and every issue is self-contained. So if you see a comic, grab a comic. Give it a shot. Issue 2 is in the process of being printed, and we had to push the release date back 1 week. Why? Because the printer ran out of paper when they received our order. So got to thank the kayfabe audience for making this a hit comic. Got to thank Jimmy Rugg for putting in those amazing variant covers, as well as my other friends who have done variants to kind of goose those numbers up. Thank you very much. And if you want to read the comics before they hit paper, go to my Patreon, patreon.com/edpiskor. $3 gets you the archive there. Well over 100 pages with new strips every Tuesday.
You can join me on patreon.com/jimrug, where I post out-of-print zines, mini-comics, original art, process, basically how I make the comics I make. And the next thing that I'm posting is the Street Angel Gang process zine. This was a little print edition that I had done a few years ago that includes pencils of my of the comic itself. You can see kind of on a graph paper there, along with my scripts. With this book, this was like the second one I think I did, I started printing out my scripts and doing my layouts on the page, like right across from it. This was a technique I used for most of the Street Angel series that was really good because you could just throw this in a backpack and carry it, work on it wherever you had a minute, and would leave a blank right page to make it easy to work. Almost like make your own sketchbook, but with your script in it. So I'll be posting that this month in June on patreon.com/jimrug. So, Ed, we are here to talk about Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely doing All-Star Superman. We looked at Frank Miller and Jim Lee doing the All-Star Batman and Robin.
What did you think about that?
I think there was a third volume planned that was going to be Wonder Woman and Adam Hughes that, as far as I know, none of that ever came out, unfortunately.
He's still working on page one.
Yes, but I was on DC's comp list at this time, so I was getting these in my, you know, like each month, pulling them out, some of the comics that I kept from that comp box. And I enjoyed this series a lot. You know, I was into Grant Morrison for a while, and some of it really lands with me and some of it doesn't. This felt like a good vehicle for Grant Morrison and what I think of as Grant Morrison. Lots of ideas. I think there's a high level of enthusiasm on the pages here, which we'll get into as we go issue to issue. But it really feels like a series that I enjoyed when it first came out, and rereading it this week, I had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, I had a bunch of fun too. I read the first couple issues back when they came out and just sort of moved on for no reason other than, I mean, maybe it was late or something and I just kind of fell out of it. I do remember liking those first three issues. It was fun reading these six. And superhero comics, by and large, to my eyes, they kind of stand and fall on the writing. There's like a base level of craft that one could point to and say, this is professional artwork. And almost every comic from the big two, like, has that base level of professional looking, you know, veneer or something. And it's the writing that can really pull you out. Whenever we are going through some of these other comics, even these older ones, you Batman Year 2, things like that, I don't know what it is, man. The writer takes this stuff far too seriously, tries to inject too much real-world pathos in something that is completely implausible. There's, at this point now, there's something that fully takes me out of it, and I often even feel embarrassed reading some of these comics, but All-Star Superman is very self-aware for what it is, and it's just, it's a wild ride, and I'm along for the trip, man.
Yeah, totally agree. I want to point out, this is 2006, 15-year-old comic. You know, in my mind, this is a couple years ago, but it's 15 years ago. So we're going to see some really good stuff. And I say, let's start diving in, and we can keep hitting on these points as we go, because there is Grant Morrison writing stuff I want to point out. But, you know, Frank Quitely, an artist that we've praised on past episodes, really interesting to me, because I think this is the first time he's you know, penciling, and his pencils are being reproduced.
I see. This is the page that everybody remembers, and to me is like a perfect template for whenever you're doing some kind of like reboot, rehash kind of gimmick. You know, there's what, 10 words, 8 yes. words here, 4 panels, everything you need to know, because you know it. You know, it's like, you know, well Santa said. Claus or something. Let's move on.
And Morrison is not indulging in word count. These are pretty sparse, the storytelling. You know, you sort of have to keep up as you go for the most part. And I like that.
I do too. You don't need the captioning.
He's not over-explaining anything.
Exactly. I was just watching, I think it was the David Mamet Masterclass, and some of the conversation was about exposition, narration, and stuff like that. Mamet described the narration as pure manipulation, and like if you meet somebody at a party, and if they were to tell you, let me tell you a couple things about myself, right. they're all lies. It's what happens on the page is the character, and that's what we're dealing with here, man.
And that's a pretty dramatic first shot of Superman in your story, right?
How hard is that to draw, right?
It's impossible,
because when you see just like those like little hints of thigh and stuff, this looks perfect.
Yes.
But when you're working on it and you're trying to make a pose like this, it feels wrong to draw just these little, like, ellipse thing. Like, look at those tips of the feet.
It's really strong, and you're right. There's so much not drawn on here, and yet it works.
Yeah.
Like, that's the restraint. You know, you hear people talk about it's the notes they don't play in jazz or whatever. I feel like that's what you see quietly going here with this whole picture. You know, like, that the sun backdrop is amazing, but hardly even recognizable. It's a really interesting picture, and I think we're going to see lots of these kind of examples of just brilliant compositions. Super simple, but works perfectly.
Makes me want to see the pencils, because where is the division of labor here?
Yeah.
I mean, like what is this?
Yeah, the inker and colorist, I don't know where the credits are in here. When we get to the credits, we'll pull it out, but it's credited with digital inker and colorist as the same person throughout this series, and I think it's somebody that Quietly has collaborated with a lot. So we'll get into that whenever I see a credits box so we can give the appropriate credit, because I think the colorist is huge. And it's another part, like that was a takeaway for me from this comic when I read it the first time, is how do you interact line art and digital color?
Yes.
Because it's an ongoing fight. People still haven't figured that out totally. But I find examples of it that work well and then stick with it, and this is one of them. And, you know, each of these issues fairly well contained, even though there's a larger story arc. This first one is a mission to explore the sun that goes awry, and Superman has to go rescue it. So that's what you're seeing here is the inside of the ship. These beings that Lex Luthor has created for this purpose, and some of them are working and some aren't. That's a pretty cool image. Reminds me very much of manga, which, you know, you see in the video, Frank Quitely sleeping on Akira volumes.
Right.
Clearly a guy who's looking at comics on an international level for influence.
Juxtaposition of ad with comic right here is kind of interesting, man. Got the Soldier Boy shooting Superman.
All throughout this series, the ads are just incredible to go back and forth between the comics and the ads. Really wild. I think they do a good job with his supporting cast and with the Daily Planet gimmick of like the reporter, the journalist, the news media. It's a really good piece, and it plays off of different pieces, and it's a narrative device often for Morrison to reveal little bits about characters or the world, what's happening.
These work as good units unto themselves. I guess the overarching story is that by going into the sun sort of triggered some stuff in Superman, and now his cells are replicating too much, like he's got cancer basically, and he's dying. So that's the through line through all of them, but these are self-contained comics.
Yeah, which makes it a pleasure to read.
Yeah.
One of these at night or something before you go to bed is really good. I like Olsen's coming in and he's wearing a helmet and has like a rocket strapped to his backpack. We're not going to address that. There's a bunch of that throughout this comic too, of these little background details that I'm sure were in the script, but it makes for fun reading because it's like, look around.
Yeah, it's just beautiful, like magical thinking too, like, you know, the idea of going to the sun was basically just scoop a ladle of sun and bring it back. You know, that's Alan Moore is never far away from one's thoughts when it comes to a Grant Morrison comic. And that's a little bit of that kind of whimsy.
Yeah, that's part of what I like about this series, too. Morrison often thought of as being that kind of idea guy. And sometimes I think it works really well and sometimes not as well. And
yeah.
This comic is just perfect, you know, like somehow Superman's the perfect vessel to have those giant ideas floating around, dropped in a panel in the background and never seen again. And it makes, again, for that rich experience. It's the visual equivalent of the artist that draws the really cool backgrounds that you get to peer over. Morrison kind of sprinkles in his ideas like that, where they're going into, like, they find, like, liquid time at one point later on. Very fun. It's easy, I think, for him to just throw those one-line ideas out, and they're kind of the perfect set dressing for a Superman story that doesn't feel like it's from the 1940s.
Right. But it embraces that stuff.
Yeah, it does, totally.
You know, like, that magical whimsy. Here's where the colorist sings, and this should be the norm, but it just, frankly, not when you look at comics. But guess what, man? We have two scenes here, and you could tell visually very easily.
Absolutely. I'm glad you said that. I 100% agree.
And the whole comic is like that with the colorists. Like, they really set up the scenes perfectly with mood and color, and you never get confused.
This art, when I first saw it, I thought it was really sparse. And it's grown on me for how effective it is. You know, like, just staggering these panels to me creates a much more interesting... The color does separate the two scenes very clearly. But if you saw this in black and white, you would still get the idea that those panels are a different piece. You know, you have your horizontal grid-like panels, and then you have the chaos that's happening 93, you know, million miles away.
Sparse in as much as a few pencil lines, but precision... Precision was like the word that came to mind while looking through this thing, man. He must be using like one of those like .3 mechanical pencils, man, because he really gets super tight in there with the line art.
Luther is controlling this creature that's kind of gone off the grid in the spaceship. And when you see Luther acting this stuff out, he has a baseball bat in his hand swinging it around. Contrast that with the high-tech, you know, virtual reality that he's working with. And again, these ads are just like, what is going on?
Great video game, dude. Like 11 or 12 bosses, and the way, like, you only fight bosses in the whole game, and you gotta climb these dudes and find their, like, weak spots.
Really?
It's so sick, dude. Every single fight is epic, man. It could take you 20 minutes, an hour to beat a boss.
I wrote a Punisher Galactus script.
You did.
And that was the story. It was Punisher scaling Galactus over days.
You give this game a shot, man. It'll inspire you.
That's hilarious. And Superman coming to the rescue of this stranded spaceship. And again, the crosscut with the blue back to Lex Luthor, his enemy. What a great page for, again, 93 million miles away. They're sort of facing off against each other.
You know, like, as you as you proceed with your sort of art making and your career and stuff, and I imagine you're the same. Like, you sort of rediscover a piece that you've been faking for a long time, so it's, like, time to start focusing on that. One of the things I've been thinking about is, like, the thickness of the muscular neck is much thicker than you think. Than I've been drawing it, than you think. And he...
Look no further than Pittsburgh's own Kurt Angle.
Yeah, exactly. And good necks on Frank Quitely.
Yeah,
Frank Quitely Superman.
Hopefully I'll catch it, but there's a profile of Superman in one of these, and his neck, dude, looks like, man, it's like Hulk Hogan's arms or something.
It goes straight down from the back of the head.
Yeah, amazing. I do love the sun backdrop is really great, again, for a colorist to get to play with. And then you get these ads in the middle.
That's so stupid.
Like, what is happening?
Well, obviously, Ra's al Ghul is fighting Batman in Gotham City at this very moment.
Yeah, it's wild. It's a weird context within these. Again, sun backdrop is, he throws this whatever it is, android thing into the sun, and it's self-destructing is what's happening, so that's your big explosion. He just barely gets there in the nick of time, of course, and then get this vessel back to Earth, or at least to the moon base.
Yes.
There are a lot of characters in this that I'm not sure about. Like, I don't know this character. But he's going to play a kind of a pivotal role. And I was thinking of him reading this as almost like Elon Musk. Like super genius, has, you know, infinite funds to do this kind of scientific research that he's leading up. And brilliant that, you know, he's going to different dimensions and stuff, interacting with alien species and intelligences. Very fun character. And I'm not sure if that's a Morrison invention or if that's a long-standing Superman character.
DC continuity always works like that for me. It always feels fake or... Like, you never know where anything comes from, man. We were looking at that Trevor Von Eden Batman annual, and there are these characters that, like, clearly have some connection with Batman, but we don't know or care because it just never... It's almost like old TV where, say, Danny Tanner has some kind of, like, specific malady in one episode, and then every character is focusing on that one thing, and then the next episode, it's never addressed right. or talked about. Like, that's the vestigial characters of DC Comics to me. It's like they're just used for this one scene, and you could forget about them, when in Marvel Comics, it's much more elegant the way the continuity transpires, man. And I have to imagine that guys like maybe Len Wein and Marv Wolfman, people who oscillated back and forth, might be able to handle that stuff better or something.
Yeah,
but DC Comics continuity has always been, like, whatever.
This guy is explaining what happened to his cells. So this is kind of the... I think this runs through all 12 issues of All-Star Superman, this idea that Superman's having this... His cells are breaking down, like he's going to die. I think that, you know, pulling these characters out of the Golden Age or out of bizarre story appearances in the past and then updating them a little, I think it's one of those things that makes this feel so contemporary. Like, it's such a cool reading because it's referencing the past issues, but it doesn't feel like an old comic. And it happens again and again. I think every time a new character shows up that is an old character, you get a sense of that.
Right. I imagine that Quitely is gritting off every single panel for perspective and stuff, because the characters, like, none of it feels faked whenever they're kind of standing on a ground plane or something.
There's some examples of your superhero neck.
Look at that thing, yeah.
It's <He's> massive.
Yeah, start just go straight down from the back of the head and starts, like, up way higher than I would think in my mind. But it looks perfect.
Yeah, it's bigger than his head, the neck. It's amazing. And again, this is Kurt Angle. Like, I saw him out in the wild one time, and it's like his head, and then the neck gets wider.
I was on a movie set with that dude, and he had to play like he was a fighter that was in round 11. So, you know, he just woke up that day and he came to the set. So he has to, like, try to make himself appear winded. And he was just doing laps around the arena for, like, 2 hours, yeah. Man. Like, just, it was impossible for him to get winded.
Yeah, that's what you always hear about him on podcasts and stuff. Like, that dude's never blowing up
in
a match. This is great. This is a moment of Clark's a couple seconds, 10 seconds late, right? And the reason is he's saving this kid and his dog. And you just see him, like, it took me, I was reading this and then rereading it. It took me, like, I don't know, 11 seconds before I even noticed that Superman's actually in this panel. You know, just tiny. I really like that detail. And I'll be honest, this hits close to home. When I was in high school, a classmate of mine ran out in front of a car to save his dog, was hit and killed by the car. Mm. And so, like, I see this scene and it's like, you know, it's kind of a real moment in a way, you know, just tucked in. Also, Batman Year One, I think of the homeless lady that Batman pulls out of the front of the truck.
Right.
Kind of a similar moment. And Morrison knows all these comics. You know, I feel like nothing is an accident. If you can make that connection as a reader, I have a feeling Morrison made that connection as the writer.
Yeah.
I like the depiction of Clark throughout here, and what we get at the end of this, you know, like, he's such a clumsy oaf. It's, again and again, they hit that beat. Lex Luthor makes fun of Clark Kent for being that way. Lois makes fun of Clark Kent for being that way. And you kind of have to have that sort of character actor presentation to pull it off. You know, it's Superman. It's the greatest human ever. How do you convince people that Clark Kent isn't that guy in disguise? You really got to, like, lay on the oafish awkwardness.
Great vestige of the old comics. You know what I'm saying? Like, the whole through line of old Superman comics is really... not about thwarting villains. It's about Lois trying to discover right. like who Clark is, and all of the weird contrivances to put them together, but also require him to be super heroic and shit. And Morrison is playing with this throughout the whole thing, and he sells it perfectly. Like, people are calling Clark chubby and stuff. So, like, you imagine that, you know, he's just wearing baggy, super baggy clothes, but Quitely sells it perfectly because he looks like, you know, a football player that just retired 2-3 years ago but is still eating the same way he did in high school,
yeah,
and he's
sloppy,
trying to bulk up.
Soft. Luther tells him that too. If you
yeah,
work
exactly.
out, you could have a good physique.
And even
also brown, like, you know, you go from the blue and red suit is so bright in this comic, one of the things I love, but whenever he's not in that suit, it's like how brown can we make him,
right? Because like, yeah, like what was the Clark Kent from the Superpowers toy? It was still like blue with the red tie. And just imagine, like, you know, where maybe he's wearing yellow underwears.
So I want to call out, here are the credits. And the digitally inked and colored by Jamie Grant. I always found the digitally inked part weird, because as far as I can tell, this isn't a pencil line. I think he's just adjusting contrast, and who knows, maybe cleaning up smudges and doing a little bit of cleanup. But I think it's mostly just adjusting that contrast to make the line essentially black line.
I just realized this, man. Shouts to letterer Phil Ballsy Ballsman, man. Year 2 student at Kubert School when I was up there. Super cool cat. And he's a dude that also designed the Akira box set that we all adore with the Akira
really?
Club and stuff.
That's a fun job.
Yeah, yeah. I think he might have got the Eisner nom, if not the actual Eisner award for that, man. So shouts to my homeboy.
Yeah, I bet that was a fun project. You keep in touch with him?
I see him at conventions every now and then.
You have to introduce us if we're out somewhere, because I'd be curious to hear about that job and what kind of stuff he encountered with that. You know, also worth noting that the cover logo is designed by Chip Kidd, who has done a lot of DC work, is, you know, a very well-known DC fan, and did several different logo dresses for DC in this time frame.
You can find a video on YouTube somewhere where Chip Kidd is showing off kind of his master version of All-Star Superman and Batman, and he created it's the size of the original artwork, and he created these like glass covers for his own books, because he always wanted books with glass covers, and you know, these are like the only
wow.
copies or whatever, man. So look around for that video. I'm not sure exactly the syntax to pop in the YouTube search engine to find it, but it's out there.
Yeah, that's something for me to track down for sure. That sounds cool. And the epilogue of issue 1, Superman knows he's dying, but is not telling anyone that, but he is going to reveal right here to Lois Lane that he, Clark Kent, is actually Superman. Something that Lois does not believe, but it is kind of this moment that, again, sets up future issues in this series and is kind of a cool story element.
And once again, playing with the old tropes of the character, you know, we did the origin story in one page. Let's not tease out the reveal across 12 issues like a jobber would. Boom, there it is right there. We have a lot more story to tell. We have a lot more mileage that we can go with Superman. So let's get this stuff out of the way and keep things rocking.
And a pretty good bombshell to drop at the end of your first. You want me to read issue 2? It's a pretty good ender.
Yeah. Turns out Grant Morrison can write good comics.
Yeah.
And make you want to keep coming back.
Yeah, what a team, man. So issue number 2, this is Lois Lane's birthday celebration. And that means a trip from Superman. So I like that he's taken her to Fortress of Solitude, super cold. Take her in her car.
Yeah.
Keep her climate controlled on the way.
Which, by the way, Alan Moore, never too far away. There's Miracle Man piece to that. Whenever Miracle Man reveals his superpower to his old lady or whatever, that exact thing happens.
It's kind of funny seeing the Superman entrance on the side of the mountain.
There, when Quietly came out with Authority and was like really hit his first stride and got people to notice, that was a vestige of, or sort of like a wing of artists that like I went to art school with, you know, because I went in like 2000, Authorities right before that, 99, something
yes.
like that, man. And so there were the Frank Quitely acolytes, and they would do this kind of thing, these like far compositions, these organic backgrounds mm-hmm. and sparse lines, try like really emulating his stuff. So
that
for a while,
me.
He influenced a lot of people.
And I always think of this as being the Mobius perspective, the
yeah.
really long shot. A totally different drawing style, but in terms of that perspective of, like, pull the camera way back.
It's really
that's
effective.
That's what I always think of. And I think I see a lot of Mobius in Quitely
yes.
in different places, so I don't think that's accidental. You know, the classic, how do you get into this? And it's like a key he made out of a star, you know, super dense, weighs tons and tons. Nobody's picking that thing up but him.
Yeah, yeah. And the old thing was like the key was the size of a
yes.
battleship or something.
Right. I like the little stuff that Quietly does. Like her coat is one that I really like. You know, whenever there's a it feels just everything is considered.
I mean, just even this, dude, showing the cracks, like he's so, like, you could sell that many different ways, right? Like,
it's true.
It looks real heavy. It just, you know, that's super ground that he's standing on, and just seeing how it cracks the foundation is pretty sick.
It's fun, too, because it's Superman being a little bit, I don't know, cheeky with Lois, having some fun with her. Like, here, try to pick this up.
Yeah.
Kind of smug. His version of the Batcave even has his own giant penny.
And a chess set.
Yeah, I like the chess set. It's very strange, sort of creepy. Like a life-size chess set. This is essentially like a date with Superman. You know, he's making her dinner. He's taking her, you know, to this coolest place on Earth to hang out. And you get to see some of those little glimpses of her doing some work and looking out her window in her quarters. This kind of perspective stuff always works for me. The round room opening. But let's give us a neat angle on it.
It's hard to draw, man. Getting all those ellipses to work out properly. That's, once again, speaking to the precision of Frank Quitely's artwork.
Yeah, for sure. There are a lot of these kind of poses of just characters standing, and they look good. They look weighted, which seems impossible with Superman. There's the neck shot that I was thinking of earlier when you were talking next. Because it's not only thick, it's long. Maybe too long?
Jimmy, I'm about to put the trace of paper down, dude, and draw the skull on there, man.
Great use, though, of, like, leave space for the colorist. If we're going to do digital color, because that's the thing that often fights between, like, inkers and colorists. You know, line art and color is who gets to render what. And there's so much room for the colorist to do their part in this art.
Yeah. Which I think also, you know, speaks to the precise drawing where there's no hiding.
That's
Frank.
True.
There's no hiding, man. You got to put everything where it's supposed to be, and he does every time.
That's a worthwhile conversation, because there are artists that I really admire for their ability to simplify and not have those extra lines. I think of a lot of alternative cartoonists like Chris Ware and Jason and people like that. Quitely does a version of that.
He does.
There's no waste. This is one of those Morrison moments where Superman has this, like, I don't know if it's a black hole. It's a sun eater, like a young sun eater. Sweet. Has to feed him suns.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And he's doing something in here that Lois isn't supposed to see. So a little bit of setup for both later this issue and next issue there. And they're enjoying their company. Superman has created some sort of, like, his native dress from the history of Krypton. It's like, I don't know, some old piece, fourth age.
Yeah, it's a special Brontosaurus burgers or some weird food gimmick. And even this is like Last Supper homage, Da Vinci kind of piece.
They're eating on like a Titanic replica.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. This the same meals that were on the Titanic the day it went down.
Very strange. Talks about the sewing part, you know, making this costume himself, which really just looks like a bigger cape.
Yeah, with like a cloak piece.
That he's taken this up because apparently, and I don't think he tells Lois this, but a result of that sun exposure is that he's smarter, faster, stronger. All these things have happened, more curious. All these things have kind of happened as a byproduct of that sun exposure. And Lois is half investigative journalist trying to piece together these things at all times. I like her characterization throughout. She's pretty good.
It's really good, and it's well thought out, man. I've known you for years and years and years, so you've been feeding me lies for years and years and years. Like, how am I supposed to trust you?
And we get into her laptop, and she's like, what if something's happened to his mind, and he's brought me here to be a part of some awful experiment he's planning in that room? How would I know? The great part of that is, yeah, what tough. You're out of luck if that's what's happening.
Yeah.
So she's kind of going on this quest, like, what's in that room? You know, starting to, having some time on her own and starting to think about this, following him around, which is kind of ludicrous, like he's not going to sense her following him. But nevertheless, this is what's happening. Gets to see some weird stuff, like these future Superman, who, again, we're going to see more of, which is neat. That, again, it's completely satisfying to read this issue and that's it. But if you read the whole series, you'll get to see this future Superman again. Kind of neat, the rereading, you know, like read all 12 of these issues and then go back and look through them again and see what you catch.
Right.
Always nice. That's a good way to handle, like, a, I think, comic book series. Very hard probably to pull off, but very rewarding as a reader.
How hard is that to draw?
Yeah. And how good does it look for something that's kind of simple?
Looks perfect.
So earlier we had seen like weapons and stuff that Superman's assembled and kind of holds here for security reasons. Lois Lane's starting to freak out and actually grabs one of those weapons that supposedly can hurt Superman and is going to this room, the Forbidden Room. Calls out Superman, and whenever he comes out, shoots him. Everybody's off the ground. No feet are touching the ground. So she shoots Superman, and it's like, I was reading this and I thought, that's really messed up that she would do that. What if that gun actually worked and she kills Superman here? You know, like, no questions asked. The first chance she gets, she just shoots him. And then the story goes on to explain that she's been exposed to this thing that increases paranoia.
Right.
Dude, how hard is it to write and draw that without caption box or narration explaining it?
You need that piece.
I was really impressed by that. Because you see her behavior playing out that way, and then you get the explanation of, oh, you got too close to this thing.
Right.
Which is pretty good. And the reveal of what was in that room, so satisfying wrap-up to this, the mystery of this issue, is for her birthday, he's created basically a drug to make her have his powers. And sewed a little costume for her. It's all set up. It all pays off. Good stuff. Good stuff. And what could be a better birthday gift than get to fly around with Superman's powers, and kind of shows on your cover. Mm-hmm. So issue 3 is that storyline of her getting to actually take that, whatever it is, some sort of liquid, and off they're going to go. Just in time to deal with this dinosaur invasion from dinosaurs that survived their like species-ending apocalypse and went underground and have continued to live and evolve, and so now they're intelligent. And if you're into David Icke, here you go, some reference to the lizard people.
Doesn't that look like Rick Rude?
It does. Oh, you soften up the arms a little bit, you could also get like a Jake the Snake Roberts there.
That's true.
Mustache, a great, great facial prop.
Dark episode of Dark Side of the Ring last week, by the way.
Yeah.
Very dark.
Yeah, the Grizzly Smith for those at home that aren't keeping up with Dark Side of the Moon.
Oofa.
I don't know if you do yourself a favor by watching that one or not.
Oofa.
How great are these, though, of the flight?
You feel it, man.
It feels glorious whenever they're flying.
The design of the dinosaur is really cool. Like, look at that face, man.
Yeah, it's really good, again, for the texture. Like, allow your colorist to go nuts. Give them a couple of marks that establish that scaly texture, and then do your Photoshop.
You got to trust your guy, man.
Yes.
You got to trust him.
I wonder if he was working with...
like, in proximity with the cartoon?
Yeah, or if they had worked together a lot before this.
Right.
So, Samson shows up, and this is another one of those characters I was trying to figure out. I'm sure every superhero comic publisher has had characters named Samson show up, but also, like, it'd be cool if this wasn't a prior DC character, and Morrison's just bringing in, you know, pantheon, Greek gods, you know, Roman gods, like bring it all in. Everything that we've got in the history of the world can exist here in this mythos. But Samson grabs this dinosaur, chucks him into orbit through a satellite. Superman's just like, come on. Just too much.
When these gods are written, they're almost always written as kind of boobs. And when you read mythology, like, it really does sort of work that way. There's a lot of, I mean, hubris comes from from the gods.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Man's flying too close to the sun with wings made of wax. And that's what we have right here with these guys.
Atlas made me think of like the DC issue 1 series. Isn't it Atlas, the one of the Kirby characters?
Yes. The first issue, yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out, like, is this character connected to that one? And it'd be a long stretch.
Yeah.
But it's still kind of fun just thinking about how these dots connect to everything.
Yeah, they feel Weisinger era. You know, like that Doom Patrol looking Superman and stuff. It feels like that would have been from, you know, the 40s, 50s, Weisinger, Wayne Boring era.
And right away, Atlas and Samson are hitting on Lois Lane. They like the super Lois.
Even in our times, a super beautiful, super smart, super strong, curious lady.
Laying it on thick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Laying it on thick and wanting to compete with Superman to maybe spend the evening with in Lois's company. Look at that souped-up car in the background, too. Almost like the Forever People mobile.
Right. And I think that plays out in mythology too, like trying to mm-hmm. win the hand of like the female gods, or the gods trying to win the hand of some human, and then fire is invented or something.
Your lizard people under the in the Earth's core, Superman down there talking about this, wooing her with some of these like jewels that he stole from you know, hundreds of years previously. There's a lot of time travel with all these different characters too, and puts on these glowing jewels around her neck that would kill her if she didn't have the Superman powers and was invulnerable to everything, but due to the radioactivity of those things. But nevertheless, she's wearing those and glowing and enjoying her birthday. Samson time traveler pulls out the Superman dead paper from about, you know, sometime issue 12 or so of this series. A little bit of foreshadowing things to come. But while they're having their little Macho Man show off, what happens? The owner of those jewels shows up. And he's a cross between a time-traveling techno god and an ancient Egyptian god. Again, it just, it reeks of Morrison. It just feels like this isn't the kind of book you could pass off to Roy Thomas.
Right. It's unfair.
It is unfair. Because really, you couldn't pass it off to almost anyone. You sort of have to have that curiosity to fill a book with these kinds of ideas. But man, you know, leaning in on the stuff that you're interested in, I think would be a lesson maybe any writer could take away from.
Feels godlike, the way the dialogue is approached with just these one-word mm-hmm. captions. You know, yeah, it's like every word has meaning.
Yeah, and there's a riddle that's presented here. I love these kind of panels, too. They describe Lois Lane in this moment, whenever he's holding her, as a state between life and death.
Yes. And by the way, the riddle is the Great Gorilla Monsoon phrase, man. What happens when the unstoppable force meets the immovable object? WrestleMania 6.
You're right. Superman solves the riddle and gets to rescue Lois Lane, essentially, and these two knuckleheads still aren't done, which leads to a double arm wrestling match that leads to a very broken, like a compound fracture Samson arm.
Yes, you could go down a YouTube rabbit hole of that too, by the way.
Yeah, man. No thank you on that one.
When you see these big meatheads doing their thing.
Wasn't sure, like, what exactly the fire that's coming up out of this island, that part I wasn't sure about. They basically, this island, like, breaks down in the process of them arm wrestling, and I don't know if that's meant to indicate that there's so much force being applied to that rock that it's destroying this island.
Right, yeah.
And Superman's just whistling while it's all happening. They go to some underwater Atlantean dinner date, and then another flight around the moon as her powers are coming down. And she talks about feeling those, you know, going away, that she can't see the radio anymore, referring to, like, radio waves that I guess are visible. Some of that stuff is really cool.
Can't smell the trees in Canada any longer.
Yes. I love all of those little subtle details because it's a way to talk about Superman without it being Superman caption-heavy kind of exposition. Yeah. And, you know, that's the perfect thing, too. Like, somebody that doesn't have those powers to show up and get those powers, that's a great way to illustrate, like, oh, holy shit.
It's very observative.
Pretty fun. And you get your moments for Morrison to shine, or quietly to shine, visually.
Notice, like, those big pieces, like, they do happen on the page turn, so it makes me wonder, it makes me think that Morrison quietly had some idea of where these voluminous ads were placed, man.
You would hope so. I don't even know who controls that. You know, Bob Schreck's the editor of these All-Star comics, and he was kind of a superstar editor at the time, you know, working with this top talent. And this was a huge, high-profile launch, these All-Star comics. So I don't know if that's an editorial, if they even have the control over that, or if it's just you get lucky. I don't know.
It's always working out.
Pretty fun. I feel like that's a little bit of an homage to, like, Action Comics 1.
Mm, yeah,
get Superman under the car. And I also like the way he handles the heat vision. It's glowing red eyes, and then you see the source or the target of those glowing red eyes,
cause
but no beams or anything. Also, it's shocking to me to think of, like, LeBron as your spokesman 15 years ago and the dude's still, like, going strong.
Yeah, man.
Pretty wild career. So this issue, you know, we focused on Lois Lane for a couple issues. Now we're going to get a good Jimmy Olsen bit. And Olsen is writing these weekly columns that are very well received, where he essentially goes out and has some sort of high concept adventure. And in this case, he's going to switch out places with that Elon Musk type character for a day mm-hmm. and get to run that organization. Just being able to go to the moon is like the nonchalant kind of thing. I guess Rick Jones would be the Jimmy Olsen of the Marvel Universe.
Well said. There's an acronym called Project, and we still don't even know what that stands for.
Yeah, Olsen even asks exactly what it stands for and never gets an answer. But the guy he's stepping in for, part of the reason Olsen gets to have this little fun column is he's going off with this different dimension, he had encountered these characters that have like light for their language, and he deciphered a little bit of it and pretty soon started up a relationship with this alien race, like a different dimensional alien race. So he's going to go visit their home planet for the day.
Doesn't some of this like feel so British 2000 AD, like Zenith or when Paradax or something, like the crazy Brendan McCarthy colors?
It definitely feels that way. It's very sci-fi, high concept. Again, like, not what I associate with superheroes necessarily, but a good context for superheroes to exist.
It makes sense that people who are kind of, like, removed from our comics, like, can just look at these characters, like, from that different angle, you know? Like, we are sitting in a room with tens of thousands of comics, and that can put blinders on you, man.
This is that, I mentioned time at the beginning, and this is where they found this, I forget what, underworld something, but it's basically they found time moving in these different metrics, even to the point of being like a solid or a liquid, and that's what they're pulling stuff out of, and it just gets too heavy and the equipment crashes in, almost taking Jimmy Olsen too. But of course, to the rescue is Superman. He has his Superman watch whenever he gets in trouble, and that means Clark Kent disappearing out of his editor's office. And this is one of those subtle, very subtle choices by Quitely. But if you notice, once Superman comes alive, he's no longer bound by those horizontal verticals. This panel's at an angle.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really good. And there's a few of those kinds of touches throughout this series. But Superman arrives in time to both save Olsen and to pull this object out. And this object is a piece of black kryptonite.
Yes.
Which, of course, very dangerous. But Superman comes out of it okay, and they're going to encase it in something protective.
For all the precision of Quitely's work, there is a ghastly component to these faces, man.
I do agree.
There is a Quitely face that he draws.
That's almost acromegaly or something.
It really is. Rondo Hatton,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's who I was thinking of. Yeah, it's funny. His faces are very, very distinct. They're not exactly like beautiful people.
No, right.
Whatever those proportions would be. I thought this was really good, the veins in the hand. Because as Superman's sitting there, he's like messing around. First, he carves a little logo in with his heat vision, and then he's squeezing this table to the point that it breaks and comments that it's probably worth more now than it was before he vandalized it.
Right, you see the lettering start to change to indicate that we're not in Smallville anymore.
Yeah, and if you're not sure, you see Jimmy Olsen's reaction, too, of like, what's happening here, Supes?
These next beats, the way that Quitely plays with the camera angles is so freaking sick, because it knocks you off your foundation, and he'll keep distorting it. Like, it's slow going. This is probably like the first piece of it.
And even this,
it just keeps going.
That may be your first piece.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Super subtle. And also, the panel now has shifted. You know, the panel itself, like the margins and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's both meta and within the panels he's doing this on a very subtle level, but definitely keep like watching. Reading it. There's no, you're not going to miss it.
See, like when I read this, now this is probably an example of the ads not doing well, because if you saw this as a spread, which is how I read it, you have this angle and then you have a shift. Yeah. And if it was here and there, it feels like the boat rocking, you know, and he just changes it every single time here.
Yeah. It's really
good
stuff.
It's angled this way. It's angled that way.
This kind of thing is really good. This was another one that stood out this week, is just how good Quitely is with the figure, because there's not that much happening. It's a sparse little room that they're in, but his ability to twist and bend figures is kind of understated. You know, that's not a giant two-page spread that we're seeing, but it's a perfectly drawn figure with foreshortening.
It's bits like that that make me think of Mobius, too, mm-hmm. when you see these characters. At a far angle, you see a lot of full bodies in Frank Quitely comics, and you get that a lot in Mobius comics.
Yeah, I noticed that in Authority whenever I first started looking at his stuff. The way they would do fight scenes, it was like no shortcuts. You know, it's the opposite of a lot of movie fight scenes that are like super close and cropped and fast cuts. It was more of like, let's do a long shot single take. So now they've got to figure out, like, how do you stop this? Superman's flipped and he's gone evil or something. And they're going over their options. There's like the Phantom Zone, you know, which is kind of the no return option. But they're going through some of the stuff that Project has in store that could possibly deal with a rogue Superman. And of course, it's up to Jimmy Olsen, since he's de facto leader for a day, to figure out what to do with this. That's pretty cool. Like whenever he lands and busts up the road from Impact.
Yeah. Yeah, you didn't see that much before this comic.
I always like that kind of stuff. It's the equivalent of like the bullet holes in, say, concrete or brick or something, where it's just this shattered, you know, shows the impact and continues on. Jim Shooter would be proud of the, you get to continue seeing it as long as they're around that spot.
And keep looking at the camera distortion, the disorienting, like on the foundation.
You're totally right about that, going back and forth with that, with those angles.
Just a chaotic moment, almost like a combat photography, like
handheld
camera.
Yeah, exactly. And he has this gun that Superman's like, ah, don't even point that dumb gun at me. And he says, it's not for him, it's for Olsen. And he injects himself with it, and it's a doomsday gun. I can't tell, like, continuity-wise, how this all is supposed to fit. Like, would this have been a story in which Doomsday exists? Or is this sort of, like, incorporating the old, you know, like, the history of Superman into this all-star Superman storytelling? So we have a Doomsday thing, and it kind of looks like Doomsday. A little bit weird.
Yeah, I think the All-Star brand is like licensed to use whatever you want in whatever kind of permutations you feel.
And Doomsday is something they mentioned earlier in the issue, so whenever I saw that, it was kind of like, oh, okay, are we going to see Doomsday come back? You know, Doomsday, the character that we know from Dan Jurgens.
Didn't it really make you wish that we would see like a Death of Superman kind of fight from Frank Quitely? Because you know he would justice.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
As an Otomo aficionado, like you know that he would take no shorts when it comes to destroying Metropolis buildings and
that's
stuff.
Exactly how it should look, too. Like, Metropolis should be a hole in the ground after that fight. But that's what you're dealing with here, is Olsen and as Doomsday versus Superman trying to get this Superman back under control. I'm not completely sure how this works, how the resolution works, but in the end, it does.
Yeah.
One of the less clear moments in this series for me. Boy, talk about good color. That magenta next to the green is really nice. And Olsen comes out of the Doomsday thing. Superman's come out of his issues. And this ends with, in the beginning, Olsen's girlfriend's talking about how, what, he's a dork or whatever. And she's going to go see this play with somebody else. But by the end, of course, he has tickets to that hot play and has written on the moon a message to her.
But he still has that bad, let me speak to your manager haircut.
Yeah, that haircut's funny. Like, I wonder, like, who... I can hardly even picture that haircut as being a thing at the time.
I've seen it. If you watch the 2000 AD documentary... There's a guy that has that, man. So like, people wore that shit. I guess just not here in the States.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm sure there are a couple of celebrities that would qualify. Just not, maybe I wasn't too up on it. 2006 era.
Right.
All right, man. Who's next? Lex Luthor. We're just going through the supporting cast. And Luthor's been convicted now of whatever stunt he was pulling, one of his crimes that's been exposed by the Daily Planet. And as a result... death in the electric chair is what he's sentenced to.
Wow, Metropolis is in a death penalty state.
Yeah, shocking. And Luthor seems very pleased with that. The title lettering of each of these issues was something I'm not sure about. They use the same font treatment on each one, and I don't know. I can understand the reason you might try to do that to make these books look a certain way, but this I don't think has held up great. So Clark Kent is supposed to go into prison and interview Lex Luthor, is the story here. Gets an hour with him. I'm surprised by the stuff that they let him have in his prison.
I know, right?
But nevertheless, he creates this robot library that can read like 10,000 stories to people, but nobody's interested in hearing them. And Clark Kent does this stunt. There's apparently a short in the electricity, and Kent does his pratfall in order to get that tool out of Lex Luthor's hands before the electricity happens, essentially saving Lex Luthor's life from being electrocuted, which is what's going to happen. You know, don't let him get electrocuted because we want to electrocute him.
I know. That's what this whole issue is, man, is Clark Kent kind of being Gomer Pyle and saving the day through controlled accidents and stuff.
I thought this was really strong, the sweating Lex Luthor exerting force. I will say he's heel striking, and I think that's going to be tough on his knees if he does survive the electric chair somehow. But there's a really good running sequence that Quitely does in We Three in the beginning. It's another guy on a treadmill, and it's like low angles and all this stuff. Always stuck with me as being like, it's hard to draw running shoes.
You think of Mr. Clean when you see this right here, right?
Absolutely.
100%. Never think of a bulky Luther. You always think of maybe this Luther, but you never think of that Luther.
Yeah, he's pushing some weight. No doubt about it. It's funny that he's done like a whole routine in the images. And mostly just ridiculing Clark Kent every panel. Every chance that he gets. Feel his muscles.
And this is where he's talking
about
real
muscles, not like Superman's.
Yeah. Like, just because he's had the benefits of being born in a different place.
It is fun to...
He's calling him a doughboy and shit here, too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, calling him a fatty.
Yeah, yeah, telling him he could work out and have some muscles if he tried. It's just hard work, Kent. Yeah, Luther's resentment to Superman, I always think, is relatable. It's very similar to Bruce Wayne. There's a really good Kevin Nolan issue of DC Legends where Bruce Wayne's out of town and Robin and Superman team up. And at the end, when Bruce Wayne comes back, he's like, never forget that he's not human.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of the same mentality that Lex Luthor has, just a lack of trust there.
This is really sick, man, where you see the... like the Frank King panel composition.
Yes.
And then you see the small version of it in this one panel right here. That's kind
incredible.
Of
metal. I love the small version next to the big one. This is the model. This is like the diagram in watching the Watchmen.
Right.
Versus the comic itself. Yeah, I really like that. And I like how it opens on the ground level. It's a 6-panel grid in the middle of a page, of a 2-page spread. That's amazing to think you're doing a 6-panel grid as like your center 2-page spread. But then those bottom panels are open. They're not panels. It's really cool. Yeah, I like that part a ton.
When you watch that Quite Lee documentary, you see the kind of rigor he puts into page compositions and stuff.
Right.
Like you really see him working things out. You just showed your sketchbook stuff from the Street Angel script thing, and he does a version of that in the margins, and it's so detailed. It's all figured out before he looks at the blank 11x17 piece of paper.
This also, Ed, you've been pointing out, like, getting your page turns right. This is another one that's dependent, you know, figuring
totally.
Out that perfect turn. And it happens halfway through the book. You know, that's not like page 2 and 3 that you could really control. This is neat because it's your 8-panel grid. And it's interesting because it goes from 4 panels into 2 panels, but still maintains that center spread. And he even gets to, like, walk around the grid, essentially. He's walking outside of that panel.
Yeah.
It's good shit. And this parasite character... Superman's presence is fueling this parasite character's power. Makes you wonder if Lex Luthor ought to be able to put together these pieces. Because that feels like a little bit too much. But the result is Parasite breaks free. Now there's chaos with all of the prisoners. You have a riot with Lex Luthor in the middle of it, essentially saving Clark Kent's life. Is like, follow me. And then we have another comic in the middle. And I don't want to be too hard on Steve Scott here, but you get to this page after reading this, and it's like, oh yeah, not everybody, the difference between like these two pages versus what you're seeing Frank Quitely do, feels like they're not even the same profession.
He knows it. He knows it. I would know it. You would know it. You know what I mean? It would be, that would be the smack in the jibs, man, to go pump some weight and sharpen the sword. Hit the sketchbook, get busy.
I agree 100%, but I also wonder because, like, the majority of comics are much closer to this,
yeah.
Especially, you know, from this time period, than to this. And it's just like, what is the difference?
Vision.
I guess.
Vision versus craft.
Yeah, you wonder, Quitely would always get fought over by writers. You know, Mark Miller, Grant Morrison. I think there was somebody else that he's done some stuff with. And I wonder how much you get from working with these guys, you know, a Grant Morrison script or a conversation with Mark Miller on the phone about what he wants to see in that art. It definitely feels different than the ad agency. Man, I keep hammering this poor guy. But the ad agency or whatever that's like, you know, we're in a war zone and there's some monsters behind him or whatever. It's got to rub off, right?
Yeah.
And there's got to be some to begin with. They don't go after Quitely if he isn't exhibiting this kind of strength, given the chance or given... jobber type comics to draw early in his career. So they get back to Lex Luthor's cell essentially, and well, I guess they defeat the parasite first.
You discover that Lex Luthor is, he could bounce whenever he feels like.
Yes, exactly. He even has a pet monkey, which he sets this whole thing up, in order to be part of the article that Clark Kent is writing.
Right.
Even describes, like, you know, what that last paragraph should look like. And then the inimitable Lex Luthor opened up the floor and shook hands with the baboon in the Superman suit.
Look at those short shorts on Luthor, man. That's obscene.
especially the prison workout.
Especially
shorts.
In a jail scenario.
Yeah, I don't think that that's going to go over very well. But walks him down to this underground cavern and basically finds a safe passage for him to get out. And there's this weird part where he loses an eyebrow at some point, and his boat driver's like, hey, your eyebrow. Sharpies it back on, and then it's fantastic for the rest of the Lex Luthor appearance here.
Gives him a damn, he gives himself a divine
yeah,
eyebrow.
Incredible, drawing it on to himself. And gives away this part of the real kicker of the article is revealing that he killed Superman.
And when you see this right here, like, is that another meta Grant Morrison? Did Grant Morrison kill Superman? Like,
feels like it,
is
right?
That, is that what we're looking at right there? Did Grant Morrison draw an eyebrow on himself? I need to see what his face looked like when he typed that page up. And I need to see if he inhabited the character somehow.
That's hilarious, Ed. I think you're right.
What'd you look like, Grant? And this, like, you know, the whole death angle, man, and you hear about, like, the River Styx and you know, the Grim Reaper taking you down to where the dead people go. Like, that's the last image of that piece right there, man.
Yeah, it's really interesting tying all those threads together, weaving in the mythology that, again, we saw with Atlas and Samson, but applied very, very differently in this case. And love Luthor screaming as he goes away, if it wasn't for Superman, I'd be in charge on this planet. That's amazing. Like, he really makes Luthor kind of cool.
Yeah.
All right, so Superman 6. This is halfway through, 12 issues were published to this, so we're only looking at the first six here, but you can see he's already scooped up a Best New Series Eisner Award, and a pretty somber cover there with Crypto and his dad's tombstone, standing over the dad's tombstone. I thought the sky is pretty well done. Kind of a realistic version of stars in the sky. And overlooking the field with his dad, talking about harvest and hard work.
Yeah, this is a flashback, man. This is Smallville. This is young Clark Kent.
And he does pretty good with that in terms of, like, Kent's face, much thinner than what we see in the other Supermans. Pretty hard to do with that simple of a face.
Yeah, maybe bigger eyes to communicate more innocence or something.
Yeah, and he's trying to do some stuff for his dad, getting rid of this old tree here, whatever, whenever a comet comes crashing in, and it turns out to be Crypto looking to have some fun. Even the dog running, Tiny, looks good.
Quite wonder the guy that drew We Three, man. He could draw some animals doing some things.
Very true. But wonder if he has a dog.
You know what else, man? Like, one of the cheat code books that I bought while in Japan was just books full of animals. So it's like, here's a chapter of, like,
that makes total sense.
Of dogs, like, you know, you could get ones for just dogs, periods, where it's like, you know, here's a big dog, here's a tiny dog. And Quietly knows the tricks. Maybe, like, he knows manga. He knows that stuff. Maybe, you know, he had some good reference.
I like that this is yet another color palette. I wouldn't normally be too into this dark of a color palette, but I do think this colorist, Jamie Grant, earns a chance to, like, play with some of this stuff. Give me a new setting to color.
Yeah. And the harshness of the headlights and stuff, like, helps sell the reveal right here.
Yeah, these guys are showing up to help with the harvest, which is something that obviously Clark could do himself.
Right.
But not really the way his dad operates, Mom, Pa can't operate. And getting rid of this tree means flying it out to the asteroid belt, sitting on the moon and looking at Earth, our second chance to hang out on the moon, this time with his dog, Pal. I remember this coming out, too. Like, again, comp list time, a really good edition of the Batman Year One book. That has that extra Mazzucchelli comics in the back, both his childhood Batman comics and then those updated pages of him sort of reflecting on drawing Batman.
So good.
And how about that for your nice color? The payoff after a night. And you can see university students, so college age, and there's your team that's here to harvest. Batman Year 100. I didn't realize that was the same time period. It's a smart ad series. Batman Year 1, same color palette. Batman Year 100, the next page, same color palette.
Yeah, who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, who'd have thought? Well done ads.
Right.
It's so rare. Wonder who was doing those at the time. I feel like they worked there for like 10 minutes. This issue, maybe. Hanging out with his Smallville pals at the diner. And it's real funny because they're doing like their "This Isn't Superman" shtick, him and his buddy.
Yeah.
And Lana's like, "Why do you guys bother doing this? I know who he is."
Taking selfies.
Yeah, that part makes me laugh. Very minor chance to do some characterization, but well done. A little bit of humor. And encountering these three guys and realizing that they're actually Supermans.
Another one of those bits where it's like, are these characters from continuity? You know, this little Mr. Mixelplick Superman. You
good
know,
job that announcing that. I was not going to try it.
Well, like, I said the name of the villain, but not the Superman version of
it. Not this guy?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a lot of consonants. But there's good build-up for those guys, the way they're introduced. It seems like they might be bad guys showing up. And as we get to learn more about them, Kent gets to learn more about it, too. I guess he's just Superman, not Clark Kent. Clark Kent's the fake, the imposter.
Right.
But young Superman gets to learn more about, like, holy shit, like, Superman's throughout hundreds of thousands of years into the future. Is that right? Or millions of years? Whatever it is, it's like there's a legacy there that I think this is his first exposure to that legacy.
This issue... It was okay, but like to me, this is like a fall off issue in a way. You know, it's kind of like "And Then He Woke Up" kind of thing. We're just looking at what it ultimately is just a dude, kind of like replaying events or something.
There's one I like this moment. So this Superman is covered up, and the reason is this is the real Superman.
Yeah,
from a couple years in the future, and he thought it would freak his younger self out seeing him. And this whole story is kind of built around young Superman refuses to let these guys deal with this monster themselves. And as a result, he's not there when his dad dies. It allows the adult Superman the chance to be there.
Right.
And so it's kind of neat. I don't know if it lands as well as some of the other issues. I don't connect as much with Ma and Pa Kent as, say, even Lex Luthor in the previous issue was probably more fun for me. But I like the idea that that's what this story purpose is, right? It's like, how can I make up for missing that moment? You know, it's not like he could keep his dad alive, but he wants to be there at the end, and that's what he gets.
Yeah, so as like a almost like a eulogy or like a Superman bucket list, like the things you want to check off before your toast, this would be one of them.
Right.
You know, you want to give Lois, you know, a good time, send her off well, have a romp with Jimmy Olsen.
And again, we see this Superman in an earlier issue. You know, there is that kind of... all of these elements, it's very tightly woven, which is something I don't think always happens with Grant Morrison scripts. I think he tends to be so idea-driven at times that maybe the tightness isn't there, like in Alan Moore. But I think in this series, it is.
Real interesting to see the things that Quitely does with, you know, precise mechanical pencil for, like, organic stuff. Grass... you know, how does he communicate that? And I'm looking at the monitor. It looks just like a filtered photo.
It reminds me of, like, manga. You know how sometimes you'll see manga where, like, there are elaborate cloudscapes and landscapes, and they look like a photo.
Right.
But it's all, you know, in that case, usually it's black and white, but it's kind of the same impact. Never thought about that, but it makes perfect sense with him.
And it's stuff like the blades of grass. Like, there are ways to do that in ink where it's addition and reduction of, like, inks and white media and stuff. But nah, dude, he just uses that 0.3 mechanical pencil or whatever. Gets it in there.
And there you see the reveal of, like, I guess the All-Star Superman is here. It's not the flashback young kid.
Right.
It's kind of clever. So, that's it for the first six issues.
Nice hour discussion.
I had fun reading this.
Yeah,
I had fun enough that I plan to read 7 through 12 this week.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll hit those next week, possibly. But just as a reader, these were fun enough that it makes me want to read the rest of it, reread the rest of it.
Should be the baseline, once again, of like what these kinds of comics are in many ways. Like, I think that it would be fantastic if, you know, a new writer or new creative team, when they jump on a book, like, don't be bound by everything. Like tell your story. I think that would just create much better possibility for just good comics. As units, these all work well. All these things that should be givens that just are not are exhibited here. And if it seems like it's thought out enough that Grant Morrison identified these things as flaws in regular comics as well, and is just not going to be the guy to like continue to add that kind of thing. You know, like the BS expositional captioning narrative stuff. Each issue, full unit, even though there is a big overarching story, MacGuffin, we'll say, of the Superman sickness, it's not Jim Shooter'd to death in every issue. Like, it's there, lingering in the background, but you don't have to have your one page where you're describing, like, because I went into the sun yesterday, I'm dying of cancer. Like, it's probably some of the most well-made superhero comics you'd be able to get your hands on in the past 15, 20 years.
You mentioned, like, bucket list for, you know, if you knew you were dying, like, give Lois Lane a great night, you know, revisit your folks if there's some way to do that. It's almost, like, opposite of something like Batman Year One, which a lot of writers, when it's like, oh, I get to do my version of this character, let me do the origin, let me do the, you know, the whole character's arc. This is the opposite. This is kind of Dark Knight Returns, in a way, where it's the end of Superman's life, and how does his life look if he has time to reflect on that? And it's a cool concept.
Yeah, and he handles it in a magical way.
Very magical.
A whimsical way, rather than grim and gritty.
Which makes sense for this character.
Yeah.
Well done. Cool, man. That was fun.
Super fun, man. Can't wait to get back to, you know, the back half. The back nine.
Yes.
Kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube video. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when new vids are available. Jimmy, what do you have?
Join me on patreon.com/JimRug, where you can download my out-of-print, hard-to-find zines and mini-comics. You can see a lot of my original art. You can see exactly how I make Street Angel, Aphrodisiac, Octobriana, and more. Patreon.com/JimRug.
Red Room Comics are in the wild, man. I'm going to be reprinting issue one. If you see it out there in the wild, scoop it up, man. You're going to be able to tell the first printing from the second printing pretty
easy.
That's
a very nice new cover, Ed.
It's going to be coming out on a monthly basis, and not unlike the All-Star Supermans. Each issue, you could just scoop one up, read it, get a full, complete experience. So if you see an issue, grab an issue. If you want to read the comics ahead of time, hit up my Patreon, patreon.com/EdPiskor. $3 gets you the complete archive. And there's 4 complete issues up there at this point.
Subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video to keep up with everything that's going on and coming out in 2021. You can also find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
Jimmy, I think you got to give these guys one more set of marching orders so we can be on our way. Read that back half.
Read more comics.